You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Welcome to our Talk Bus Stop, a monthly youth-centered podcast about how artists do their work and make a living. I'm Nicole Cabrera.
I'm Erica Thomas, and today we're having a special episode from Nafasi Art Space, where we are hosting Kwame Nchauru, who is the label manager for Maishi Music Tanzania and the performing arts director of Nafasi Art Space in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. Welcome, Kwame.
Thank you so much.
A little about Nafasi. Nafasi Art Space was founded in 2008 by a small group of Tanzanian artists with the aim of improving access to and widening participation in visual arts in Tanzania. They are Tanzania's leading center for contemporary visual and performing arts. It's a vibrant community of artists, musicians, dancers, performers, and technicians based in the industrial area of Mikocheni B, Dar es Salaam. Kwame, welcome to the show. We're so excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm also so excited. Yes,
yeah, we're very excited. Yeah, it's exciting to have someone who's like from another country who has a different perspective from sort of like what we are used to. And I mean, just to get started, can you tell us, you know, in your own words, more about yourself and kind of who you are and what you're doing now?
My name is Kwame Nchauru, and I'm a Tanzanian, and I work as a performing arts manager here at Nafasi Art Space. But of course, I've been in the arts for quite some years. I started working in Zanzibar, which is an island here in Tanzania, where I was one of the founding members of the annual festival known as Sauti za Busara. That's where I started my career. And that was in 2003. And in 2004, we started the first festival. I had to leave Zanzibar to come back to Dar es Salaam in 2007 for family reasons. Because until then, of course, I still wanted to be part of the festival team, and also the festival, I believe, needed me to be there, but it was not meant to be, because by then I was living with a partner of mine, and then she was, of course, pregnant, and she was living in Dar es Salaam. It was difficult. She was getting ill most of the time, so I had to be close to my family, and I had to leave Zanzibar to come to Dar es Salaam. And of course, it was a bit, in a way, it was also risky, because living in Dar es Salaam with no job and the family, of course, my partner was working. But then luckily, the way I started was by volunteering in different artistic and cultural programs happening in Dar. You know, I used to send emails or texts to whatever events that was happening in Dar es Salaam. And through that, I came to meet a lot of people, and they gave me a lot of suggestions on what to do here and there. So, and then I, for some time, I had like temporary consultancy with British Council, where I was facilitating a monthly program, which was called WAPI, meaning Words and Pictures, which was actually a platform meant for up-and-coming artists, where they would come and showcase what they can do. And then we identify those who shows positivity in the arts, and then we suggest for them to join other initiatives in the art and cultural sector. And then after that, I got a chance to work for the Swiss Embassy for 3 years, also on a consultancy basis, and where my role was to identify areas where the Swiss cultural program would be able to support. And that, you know, in Tanzania, the issue is that, like many other African countries, I believe, a lot of our creative minds, you know, or they learn or they become professionals just by hearing and looking. You know, we don't have enough formal institutions to train people in these areas. So what we will do was to identify these talents and find ways to support them. So I worked for 3 years, and after that, I came to Nafasi as a volunteer to support a monthly programs. And then later on, of course, the Nafasi team came to me and suggested that maybe I become part of the team, like full-time employee, and that's how I joined here.
Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah, wow. Okay, really good rundown on kind of your history of work and all that stuff. But just to kind of go back, I'm curious to know, you know, what got you into sort of like this industry, sort of managing and wanting to become involved in arts? Because like you mentioned, like you said, in a lot of African countries, it seems that there's no formal education where people are going to school to learn to do art. What sort of drew you to this sort of career and such?
I would say that started from an early age. Of course, my family. I remember my father was a civil, my late father was a civil servant, and we were living in a town south of Tanzania near the border to Mozambique. And as a civil servant, somehow he would travel, and somehow he was one of the few lucky ones who were able to also go for studies in the UK back in the days. And then, of course, when he came back, he brought some, you know, like a vinyl player. Mm-hmm. So at home, we had music around. But also, during school holidays, as a young boy, I used to go and visit my grandfather and my grandmother's village. And during those holidays, those were the times when we had like all these local festivities in the villages. It was during the time when young boys and young girls came out of initiation processes, where sometimes, you know, like young boys from my tribal areas, you know, we had this tradition where young boys and young girls would be taken for a month long, a kind of like a camp where they go through a lot of trainings and to sort of like prepare them into responsibilities, adulthood, I would say. So when they come back from the process, of course, families and friends, you know, would celebrate that now you are grown up, you are a new person. And so we had a lot of traditional dances and music and singing and songs and food and drinks. And so I think that got me into it, you know, into loving art, especially music. Mm-hmm. And of course, at home, as I say, you know, we had all these vinyl players. And even my grandfather, you know, he was also, he somehow worked as a civil servant. And at home, he also had a vinyl player. So I had a chance to listen to music. And then, of course, when I started my secondary school, my elder brother, he also passed away, unfortunately. He was a local DJ in the local in the same area, south of Tanzania. And during holidays, when I went to visit him, you know, he would take me to where he was performing. And then for some time, I also, you know, we got into watching some video from, you know, like VHS players. We would see some of the, especially, of course, there was an American influence in music with us, because there's a lot of that during the breakdance era and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I even was a dancer at some point, and I was participating in like a dancing competitions as a young boy, and down in the south. I was surrounded by music, so to say. Mm-hmm. And funny enough, you know, when my father passed away, that was in 1991, it was a bit, of course, it was tragic, and he was the one who was financing my studies. So then I was kind of like stuck. Mm-hmm. And so I met a friend, and then I said, you know, I now need to find a place where I can start something which is not so long term, but also after studies I could find maybe a job, because my mother was constantly also ill, and she was getting old, and I felt like I needed to support her. So then I joined an institution which teaches hotel management and stuff like that. So I took a food production course, so for 9 months. So after which, then I went to, for my first actually job after the course was to go to the refugees camp after the Rwanda-Burundi refugees crisis. And this camp had a lot of delegates from different kinds, different parts of the world. And so they had like a proper kitchen and a bar, and so they needed someone who would be there to sort of like plan menus and plan the bars. So at least, even though we were out of nowhere, but still, you know, people wanted somehow have life. So I went there and I stayed for 3 years in these camps. And then after that, I went to Rwanda and Kigali for 6 months, and then I left to Zanzibar, where I was employed to in one of the big resorts, which when it was full during high season, it was around 300 people. And I was supervising one of the kitchens there. But I still, you know, working in that big hotel, I enjoy cooking, but working in that big hotel, for me, it was like working in an industry because it was so many people, and there was no art in what I was doing. So I just kind of forced because I needed to bring the bread back home.
Mm-hmm.
But my day offs, I started attending a Dao Country Music Academy in Zanzibar. And then I was a student there, and I took violin out of curiosity because I thought it was not a very common instrument here in Tanzania. And I wanted to study it. I still have my violin at home, but of course I did not finish because the director of the music academy said, you know, Kwame, I think that I see a potential of you in music, and I have a friend who wants to start a festival in Zanzibar, and he's looking for a partner. So that's how I came into the festival picture.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see. Yeah, that's sort of a bit of what my next question is. So like what was pretty much your involvement, sort of like the inspiration or the reasoning for sort of starting this festival. And before you say that, can you explain to people who might not know what this festival is, like sort of like what it is and what it is today pretty much?
The festival, we gave it a name known as Sauti za Busara, meaning sounds of wisdom. It's a Swahili word for sounds of wisdom. And it is a festival focusing on pretty much African music. And African music from musicians from around Africa. But the main focus is actually Tanzanian music, and then the regional music, meaning East African, and then Africa as a whole, but also the diaspora. That means, you know, we have our musicians even coming from as far as America, as long as they have like African music content. And so this is the music. And now, I can't remember because the festival started in 2000. The first festival was actually 2004, and now 2022. So you can imagine how many years that has been in existence. And so it is a great festival. It attracts a lot of people, I would say all over the world. Including America as well, who comes to visit. And at some point, I think even CNN actually put it in like a festival number 6 out of African music festival that exists today. It is a very interesting event, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe also, if I can add some other things that I've been doing as well, was I've also been working supporting different musicians as their manager, and sometimes just as a friend, because I think there's a lot of interesting music that has not been heard out of their own comfort zone. And so I usually try to support them by maybe putting together like a profile bio, pictures, recording maybe video clips that we will use to promote these groups so that, you know, we can find some other platforms for them to sort of like be heard elsewhere. So through that, I also had a chance to travel with groups. I had traveled to, of course, around East Africa mostly, but also Europe, and then islands like Reunion, Mayotte, but also America once. That was in 2016, I think, where we brought a group, which is a group that plays music that is very popular, but from the poor areas of Dar es Salaam, I would say. And the type of music is called Mchiriku, and the group is called Jaguar Music. So I was a manager for this group, and we had a tour of America where we started in Washington, then we went to Virginia, and then to New York, New Mexico, California, Joshua Tree Festival, and these kind of places.
Yeah. I'm curious, how do you go about being sort of like a manager and how do you get these gigs for them to be able to travel around the world, and like sort of the logistics standpoint of that?
Mostly it was not really done by me, because you know, you did not have had those kind of like really international connections, mm-hmm. so to say. But there was a guy, his name is Werner Grebner, he's from Germany, but he has a long experience with Tanzania. Mm-hmm. He first came to Tanzania many years ago. He's an old guy, and he started in one of the University of Dar es Salaam, in ethnomusicology or something like that. And so he was around Tanzania for many years, and then he speaks Swahili, and he was so much connected. And then through him, I sort of like assisted him, mm-hmm. but most of the international connection came through him, I would say. Mm-hmm. Of course, I am now also, even now, you know, because this guy now, I think he's kind of retired. And I remember even yesterday, one of the member of the group came to me to say, you know, Kwame, we've been here now almost 5 years and nothing is really happening, and we like for you to sort of like assist us again, to sort of like be able to maybe travel, but also record and such a kind of things. And so I'm working hard now here at Nafasi to get connected. I'm looking for connections. Mm-hmm. Here in the region, but also international, anywhere in the world where we could actually sort of like be able to promote more of the groups, because I'm so curious talking about music, because if you talk about Tanzania and Dar es Salaam as a whole, you know, a lot of young people are so obsessed with the style of music which is called Bongo Flava, which is like, of course, young people. Of young people. Bongo Flava started as a music that had the influence of some of the American music, like R&B, hip hop, and then they sort of twisted it around, putting some local influences in the music, of course, and then sing or rap in Swahili. So it is quite popular. And now there's an Afro pop, mm-hmm. which is more like, you know, a lot of young people, like if you have listened to a Nigerian music, and then there's also South African music. So in Tanzania, we sort of like blend all these together into this way, and then add Swahili, mm-hmm. and some local influences. So that is very popular. But for me also, I find it as unfair to other musical styles, because a lot of those who are growing up now, they feel like, okay, this is music. This is the only thing, because it is played constantly in the radios, constantly on TVs, and I feel like, you know, there's also other forms of music that needs to also get their share in the picture. And I think there's a lot of interesting stuff out there. And one such example is this young lady from Zanzibar, and she's the great granddaughter of an old musician who passed away many years ago, like in 1904 or something like that. And her name was Siti Binti Saad. And she was the first African musician. She was from the slave family in Zanzibar, slaves family. And then she was the first one to be invited to go to India and Pakistan to record a vinyl, an album. And then, so this great-granddaughter now has bounced back, and she's a great singer. They sing a type of music called Ta'arab, which has influences from the Arabic music, the traditional music, and Indian kind of like, so all mixed together. So it's very interesting. And last year, through a support of a record label from the UK called On The Corner, they recorded an album. And this album was selected as the best African album of the year for this magazine called Songlines. And of course, it was an album of the month for the Guardian newspaper from the UK. And so last year, they had a chance to go to Netherlands, the Guess Who Festival. And then they went to Belgium and Sweden. So it looks like, you know, there's potential for them to also access international market, as I see. And they want me to be kind of like a manager to them. And I believe, of course, there's a possibility there. And this is just a few of those potential music style that
Well, you mentioned that you were a manager for Jagua, and you're now kind of speaking about like these two potential sort of artists wanting you to take them on, for you to be their manager. What are some of the decisions and sort of reasonings behind you choosing a certain group or artist to manage? Like, how do you choose who you want to manage?
I think it's also uniqueness for me. As I said, you know, there's this sort of like predominant style that you hear every day, everywhere. It's the same kind of music. And for me, also as a sort of like someone in the arts, in the music, someone who also cooks, you know, when you have a menu and you eat the same thing every day. You know, so
yeah.
for changes. And this is like, me. And also, you know, like having those early childhood opportunities to go and visit the villages to my grandparents. And that's where I, and then because there's a lot of young people who have not such accesses, they just grow up in towns. And because the towns, you know, you get what you see, you hear what they want you to hear. But somehow, you know, there's some also hidden stuff out there. For just and even the reason that, you know, I was invited to come to work to Nafasi is also because, you know, they know that usually I surprise people of all these different art forms. For example, at Nafasi we have these events. There's our main event is called Weekend Live. Weekend comes from the English word weekend. Then we write, just write it like it's really Weekend. It's our biggest festivity. And usually when we have Weekend Live, a lot of people come and they know that there's a surprise in store for them. And usually it is very vibrant. We've got some links in the YouTube where you can see what happens during Weekend Live. So during those events, when we finish, it's like at 1 a.m., usually people don't want to go home and they say, you know, please play some music. So maybe we have a playlist and people continue to party and drink and enjoy. And so sometimes, you know, what I do to surprise them is that I bring in something completely different from what they used to sort of like hear or enjoy. And one such a thing is like there's this traditional music that's called Vanga. It is from the Zaramo people, which is a tribal like ethnic group from Dar es Salaam. And Vanga is played, when you go to the villages, it's really very explosive. It's very, and people really dance and enjoy. But a lot of young people in town is like, they don't want to be seen, to be associated with such a kind of music, because there's a word we call Mshamba. It's like someone from the villages, from the bush, who doesn't really know how to, doesn't have swag, so to say. One day I said, you know, tonight I will not bring a DJ. And then so I had these guys coming with the drums and then hit them. There's a big mango tree here in the compound. So they were hidden there because it was dark. Nobody could see them. So at the end of the festival, we were, okay, where's the music? We still want to enjoy. And then I went, gave them a sign, the Vanga people, and then they started. And you can't imagine what happened. Everybody ran there, dancing on the dust, and every one of them. And at the end, you know, we usually, at the end of each festival, we have like survey forms where people write. And a lot of those said, you know, oh, so this was a great experience, you know, because it was something different. We really enjoyed it. So it means that people, it doesn't mean that people doesn't really like, it's just that, you know, a lot of these musical styles doesn't have those opportunities, you know. People kind of like neglect them. There's also a group that come from a village in Southern Highland region of Tanzania. They are called Wamwiduka. Duka means a shop, but Wamwiduka is meaning that from the shop. I don't know why they call themselves that, but these are four young people. They make their own instruments. There's a bass, which is really cool. You sit on it. And then there is also some sort of like a guitar or ukulele, it looks like that. And then there's shakers and drums. and the way they sing. I mean, this group, you know, they also passed through Nafasi Art Space. It's also one of those groups that the people, because these guys, usually they call them nomadic. They go around the street, and then you can stop them, and then you give them a few thousand shillings. They play you a song, and usually they are very creative. They can even create a story out of the surroundings, you know, from the people who are around there. They can make a funny joke or something like that through their songs. So they're very interesting. And then they go, so when I met them on the streets, you know, it's like, the thing is that people sometimes tend to value you from how you look, maybe sometimes. And this is why, you know, Bongo Flava is popular, because people look at the videos and then they sort of like translate the quality and they sort of like, you know, give them respect because of how they sort of like look. But when we look, you know, they're like simple guys, go around this. But for me, when I listen to them, I knew there is something. And I really enjoyed the music. So we brought them to Nafasi. And of course, once you amplify those sounds, even here in Nafasi, you know, I still have the video of the first performance here at Nafasi Art Space, in how people were dancing. Because like I say, it's like a menu. When you're eating a new thing and then you enjoy that type of food, it was the same thing that I could see there. So for me, it's a proof. And so it gives me more curiosity to look around for deeper and to find all these surprises and then share with the community, with the world.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you had a violin, correct?
Sorry?
A violin,
yes.
Yeah. Were there any other instruments that you played? And if so, have you also ever thought about making your own music, especially since you're always so surrounded and so inspired by music? Have you ever had that thought to you know, make your own music? Be like, this is my music.
Not really, so to say, because even that violin, you know, now I'm not a violinist, mm-hmm. so to say, because, you know, it takes time to be proper violinist. And the problem was, you know, I started, and then, of course, the director of the music academy came to me to say, I have a friend who is starting a festival, and he's looking for a partner. So I didn't have enough time, because the first 3 years, it was only two people in the office. Mm-hmm. No holidays, 3 years. So to go back to school was like, okay, a big no. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do that. And of course, I can play drums, because this is something that we grew up as young boys. I remember we used to make small drums out of like used milk tins or just tins which were used already. So mm-hmm. we'd put some kind of plastic on top. And we had like different sizes of these tins, making different tones of music. And we could play around. And we even made some small money, you know, because people sometimes during festivities would go from door to door and play in front of a house, you know, like five of us. And people enjoy. So it is something that I can do, but I think I have this big responsibility now as more of a sort of like manager, just to sort of like try and guide, try and support what is already there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wanted to ask Erica if she had questions, since I know we spoke a little bit before this.
I think you're doing great. And normally we have a couple of students on the call, so Nicole's getting the whole show today, but I'm afraid you can keep rolling.
I'm going back to sort of like when you were touring with Jaguar. Were there any places that you really loved, or some places that you would revisit again that you hadn't been back since?
I remember we went, I don't know, was that New Mexico? I can't really remember where we were for the first time, you know, like in the, what are those called? Like the hang, and there were this big like mountain and valleys, and then you have like a cable car, is that what you call it? Mm-hmm.
Cable car.
Which was a bit scary. I remember some of the, like closing their eyes and praying, because, you know, and some of these cable cars had like glass, and your feet, so you could see down there, and it was a bit crazy. Of course, you know, the thing about touring is that we did not really have enough time to also meet the people, exchange, because that is something that I would love to do, to also hear their stories and to sort of like relate. And in some situations in the tour, I also met some people who had no sort of like clue of how Africa, because how Africa, is it safe there? And they said, you know, I'm from Tanzania, and we never had a war in Tanzania. You know, it's one of those few countries where, you know, it's always been peaceful. So of course, Africa is a continent, and there are many countries. But ours is always like that. It's a friendly, I think, of course, for those who have been here, they might actually be able to prove my words. So I really loved, but I loved, of course, I loved New Mexico, is that one area, and also the fact that at one point we went to this special center where they had some people, especially people with disabilities, where we also performed. And I was impressed because even here, you know, those kind of people get support, but there are also some areas where a lot of those people are just maybe at home, sort of like hidden, and they don't get accesses like those ones, because I remember we visited that place and there were some paintings done by the, you know, same people. And even I remember one funny story, because we had a dancer, a young girl, with us, and at one point, you know, we were playing the music and she was dancing with them, and they were dancing, and then there was also this young man, he was also, they were all, you know, people with disability, and he was also interested to dance with our dancer. And then I think there was another girl, also with a disability, who was very close to this young man, and she took like a scarf and started kind of like slapping, because she thought it was too much, that maybe his boyfriend would have been taken by our dancer or stuff like that. It was funny. But I think we were so impressed, because even I was, after that performance, most of it was also something very good for us. It was like a therapy also, to see like you engage with people who usually we sort of like keep aside in the like especially in the poor communities, and for them it was a learning process. And at one point we were in New York, and we were in this underground kind of a transport system, and then we stopped somewhere, and then a guy came in and he was like, you know, I've not slept for 2 days, I've not eaten, and he had some kind of a tin, and he said, can you maybe share a coin or something like that, through a car accident. And he came to my room and said, you know, tomorrow if you go out again, I would like to take some of my coins to go and share with those guys out there. Here, you know, people are like that. But of course, he is also from a poor family. So I took those coins, and there was this shop in New York where they sell different things. So I went there, and then I used, because for him, it was difficult to understand the coins, the American currency. So I knew that this was a lot of money too. So I went, and then I bought some gifts for his kid, for his father, for some of the friends. And then I came back with a bag, and then he said, you know, those coins I wanted to give away, this is what I got for your families. And he was so surprised. But I said, it's not that I don't want you to help people, but I said, you know, I was told, I don't know if you can prove me, that you know, some of these people also sometimes are being taken to some special centers. If that is true, I don't know. That is something that I heard. And then, but usually they escape because they want to be in town, and then they ask for money, and sometimes when they get the money, they go to the supermarket and maybe take cans of beer, and then they drink and stuff like that. I mean, I'm not really sure. So I said, you know, because you have got a lot of, I told him that you have got a lot of people around you that you can also help with what you get from this tour. So it was interesting. And then I think for me, even here, we try sometimes when I work for the festivals, and when we invite artists to come, usually I think it's very important for those who can hear this, that it's very important if somebody comes from far away, it's so unfair that they come the first day, they stay the second day, the fourth day they perform, the third day they perform, and the fourth day they leave, they fly away. I think there's a need for a chance for them to also be able to meet the people, see the scenery, and visit here and there, And I think that's what, for me, that makes sense. But I don't know how, but it is something that I feel that sometimes it is, artists are being treated unfair on that angle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually wanted to ask, currently right now, you're the director for the Nafasi Art Space, correct?
The manager of Nafasi Art Space Performing Arts Department.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, how did you get to be in that position?
You know, I did not really, like many others here, I did not really had a chance to start formally, you know, like the art.
Yeah.
It was something that I loved. And of course, when I went to work for the festival in Zanzibar, the director had a much longer experience in that area. So he became my mentor. And then I started going online and of course, trying to find out how that works. But I also had opportunities to go to different places. At some point I went for an internship for 3 months in Germany. There's this world and folk music festival. It's called Festival Hudostadt. So I also stayed, those areas where usually I sort of like managed to learn through practicing and through asking questions. And I usually I like to network and partner, and where I find difficulties, I ask and try to find answers. And so here when I came, because of my experience, you know, working with Sauti za Busara, and you know, I think I played a big part in the festival in terms of how we curate it and select the artists. But it's not only about selecting, it's also about how to sort of like program them. You know, which artist starts, which one finishes, you know, from this artist to this art, you know, so those that is a tricky part. If you mess up, then sometimes I think people who might leave earlier and then they miss the best part later. So these are areas where somehow I have some expertise.
How do you curate some of your work? I know you said, you know, you have to be able to put stuff in order so that it kind of works, but do you have like a process in which you curate stuff, or is it kind of more like, well, I think this sounds good and then this person next and that person next?
Because usually, you know, when we have artists coming to perform, we ask them to send the promotional materials. So we read who they are, we watch their videos, we watch their live performances, and then sometimes you know that something like this, I think, deserves to be in the beginning. And then, of course, the graph needs to go up. And then sometimes in the middle, you can even slow it down a bit, depending on how it is. And like here at Nafasi, our events are not predominantly music, like multidisciplinary kind of like events, where we have both visual and performing on the same platform. So for example, usually we have we start our events by like from 3 p.m. we have like we call it Chap Chap Workshop is a workshop, is a public workshop where you can come with your family, so yourself, your friends, your parents, they can all participate in this kind of workshop. It's more fun but also very artistic, to sort of like get people to be interested in the arts when they come here, so they also experience different things. And because going back, you know, first it started as a visual art space only, and to get a lot of locals interested in the arts, especially things like paintings, especially things like abstract paintings, it was very difficult. They were like, okay, so what is this? This is like someone who doesn't know how to do, because people wants to see something clear. They want to see you, your face, and your nose. And so to get people to come and be interested, we decided to have them performing art elements. Because music is loud, people love music, like to dance. So then we had people coming here. So after Chap Chap, what follows later is exhibitions. So we open up the exhibition and people go in the exhibition rooms, then so they can see all these paintings. And we had announcements, we explain what it is, and people started asking questions. And immediately after that, they go back to the main stage. That is me. And there, course, maybe we start with a, it could be theater. Oh, like something like really sort of like building up something that is mellow, not so upbeat. So it goes like that. So we create, but also we mix up. It could be like I say, like a contemporary dance, and then you have something very slow, like a dance music, a live music, but very slow, and then we go to traditional music, completely traditional music, like drumming and people dancing with costumes, and then it goes to something that is more like an orchestra or a choir. So I think because of that mix, people never get tired because they sort of like have different tastes as they go along. Obviously, towards the end, that's where we have like really jump kind of atmosphere.
Kwame, I'm interested to know if you you sort of mentioned in the beginning of the show about your grandfather or family members who had record players being somewhat influences, but I'm curious about if you had any mentorship when you were a young person that led you, not formal education, but like a community member or a friend or something that was a mentor for you as a young person?
Actually, not. I don't know how to put it. Mentorship was there, but it was like invisible. It was just because something that is around you, and everybody, most people, and not everybody, but most people were actually, especially us as kids. Like I remember, like back in the days, we used to have like public holiday, public festivities. There was what is called Saba Saba 77, which is like Farmers Day, like a National Farmers Day, and this was the climax of National Farmers Day. Usually, every region of Tanzania had a specific venue where we had different studios. I would say maybe like where different farmers associations were sort of like showing out, explaining what they really do and exhibit. But of course, to make it more fun, there were a lot of also performances. People bring like performances with even animals, with snakes, but also just performances with drums and songs. So you have to, we were sort of like, most families will take their members to go to these specific places. But also even religious festivities, like for Muslims, they had the Eid al-Fitr, and during that time, even before that, after the holy month of Ramadan, before that, you know, there is this, usually at night, they had a specific kind of like performances. It was called Daku. This was also something to remind people to prepare themselves for the following day, where they would eat something special, because tomorrow will be a long day without eating or drinking. And so Daku was also another popular area where we would. So I think it was because during our time as kids, we were surrounded by music everywhere. Even during sad times, like during funerals, there was some specific music that was maybe through singing and clapping, you know. So it was like everywhere. So I think that was my mentorship, so to say. But because I was not really, I did not really plan for myself to become a musician. It was just something that was around me. But if I had planned, obviously I would have that specific sort of like mentorship, like a teacher to sort of like train me on how to become more professional. But it was there, it was kept there in my heart because it is something that was around everywhere, even in schools.
Well, maybe we want to start gesturing toward wrap-up time.
Yeah. So sort of kind of like our final question for everyone is, what sort of advice or sort of words that you can give to upcoming youth, whether it's about learning how to manage sort of projects or just for upcoming artists or musicians, what are some things you would say to them?
First, I mean, for me, maybe, I don't know whether you are asking me in terms of like, you know, like a global view, or is it like a Tanzanian view or American view?
From your, honestly, just from your experience, like from what you've learned in your life, what is something, a piece of advice you would give to any aspiring artist? So really it's just about your experience and what you've seen in your world, I would say.
Yeah. First of all, I think what I would like to share with them is that, you know, there's a lot mm-hmm. of content, a lot of raw materials to build your house, and there's no tree without roots. I think it's very important not to sort of like just start from up there, out of the blue. Maybe creatively, because this is art. This is just my view, my only honest view. And the reason I say that is because for me, when I see these trends of artists, like, you know, they see something or someone becomes popular, and they all move towards that side, because that particular artist has become popular by doing what he or she does. I think it's very important to still think that, you know, there is a lot of more content out there that you can still create and being honest to your heart. And on the management side of things, for me, usually my advice would be keep those you manage your family. You know, usually this is how I do it here. When I was managing Jaguar, for them to be able to sort of like trust, because not only to listen to me, but also to trust, was I became a family. You know, I participated in different occasions, that like family occasions of the musicians, whether it was sad, like death, or happy, like weddings, a new baby was born and stuff like that. So I'll take a gift to them, and I was there. We ate together, we drank together, and then I think that helped me a lot, because, you know, as I said, you know, musicians like Jaguar, you know, they come from really rough backgrounds, and sometimes, you know, this has affected the way they behave sometimes. So with me, I had no problems, you know, like until today, you know, they still call me, hey, manager, even though I'm not really officially their manager as of now, you know, though I'd love to, because now I'm really employed by Nafasi. But I think that was one of the areas where I was very successful working with groups like those ones, and the one that I'm still associated with. You know, like now I'm at Nafasi, but I still constantly, as I said, you know, getting all these young boys, you know, we want you to manage, you want to manage us, to manage us. And I say, you know, maybe now I don't want to be, I don't want to sort of like, you know, promise something that I cannot deliver, because being a manager, I mean, it's time and dedication to what I have to do, what I have to deliver to you. And so I'd rather be your friend and not just say, you know, because I can manage this and that and that and that, and then not being able to be to make it right to them as they expect from me. But I think, I don't know if that is something that gives you an answer to your questions.
No, yeah, for sure. I feel like it's a little bit different from what we've heard, so it's like a nice to hear. Yeah, it's just nice to hear a little bit of a different response. So, yeah, totally made the mark.
Yeah, but also, you know, like me, I'm also I'm still, of course, in the learning process. As I said, you know, I do not have like a formal mm-hmm. way of education in the arts, but you know, I've learned a lot. I think mm-hmm. Something that I can also share with the others. But also, I think I have to look on the other perspectives and be able to, because the world is becoming, you know, more or less like one, and we more or less go along the same lines and channels. So it is very important for us, mm-hmm. and which is why I said, one of my priority areas this year is to network and we give opportunities to the artists where they can be able to meet. And nowadays, of course, things like recording, you don't need to go physically. You can record a track and then send it to America, and likewise back here, and then of course there you have something. But if it happens that you can meet, but then that is another area, that's another side. But areas like residencies, I think these are very important for the artist to be able to test new hits.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Well, first I would like to say thank you, Kwame, for being our
thank
guest.
You.
I'm really excited to share this interview with our listeners. I want to say thank you to Metro Community Placemaking Grant for generously funding this radio project, and to Portland Institute for Contemporary Art for their fiscal sponsorship of the show for the past year. We really appreciate that. And I also do want to echo Kwame's invitation and just say, as a resident of this of Nafasi Art Space currently, I've just had such a wonderful experience so far and really met such lovely people. And it's been really interesting and engaging for the work. So I would say also to look at the residency program and please apply.
And if I can add a little bit about residency programs.
Yes,
because,
yes,
you know,
please.
Of course. I don't know, but I think, you know, young people like, what's her name?
Nicole,
yes. But to come maybe like, if there's a chance for groups to also visit Tanzania, we'll be very happy to host you here. So please make an effort out there to support young people like her to come to NAFAS, because this is the, for me, this is like the source. This is where there's excitement, and I believe that more. I actually forgot to actually share with you another program that I did. There's this group called Safi Theater. It's actually, I'm sort of like an ambassador of this group. And what they do is there's this young man, his name is Ramadan, and he trains young people as early as 10, even 8 years old, from very difficult backgrounds. Maybe losing parents, orphans, or sometimes like sick parents, or even parents with alcohol problems. And then these young people, what he does is that he trains these young people traditional music and acrobat. And so in return, you know, we get a chance to sort of perform in different platforms. And I remember I had some issues at one point where some people were asking me, why are you getting young like kids to sort of like work? Because performance is like work. So I've always had the need to explain why we are doing what we are doing. Is that, you know, these kids, you know, if you leave them where they are, they grow up with unknowingly of what will happen, but usually they end up really in bad situations. So what we do is, of course, they perform, but what we earn, usually send them to school. And also there are two schools where we offer free traditional dance and acrobatic classes, and in return, they take in some of these kids to go and study. We also have the kids now who are in secondary school, and they actually been through these processes. And we also had a chance to go to Algeria and Germany with these kids. So this is another area where, usually when, it's an area where I gives me a drive to sort of move forward. Because when you see people, young people who were coming from really having sad stories, and then when you see them, you can bring that smile back. It is so satisfying for me personally. I remember one incident when we were going to Germany. There was this young boy. He was very tiny, but he was very talented. Always he was like the star of the show. So then when we wanted to take him, you know, the embassy said, you know, he cannot go because, you know, we need a consent of the father or the mother. And the father, you know, he just disappeared. He never took responsibility. The mother, she was still not settled. So this kid was staying with the grandmother. So I tried many times to go to the embassy to explain, you know, this kid is staying with the grandmother. I took the grandmother there and said, no, we need the mother to be there. And then finally we found out that the mother went to Dubai, but to Dubai she was doing some like secret dances in some like, I don't know, brothels or whatever it is you may call them. So she was like really not reachable, but we finally managed to, because the embassy said, of course, if the mother is in Dubai, tell the mother to go to the embassy, German embassy in Dubai, and then from there she can prove that, of course, she can say, go ahead and take the kid. And then the mother, we called her, we spoke to her, but she never went to the embassy. I think she was scared because of what she was doing, but we said, this is not a Tanzanian embassy, this is a German embassy. They have nothing with whatever you're doing out there. So finally, I think that was the last day, it was, I think it was on Friday. And if that final day, if that didn't work, then that would have been hit. And we were all so sad because he was our star, but also he was a little boy, and we wanted to be there, and he was so keen to travel for the first time, going abroad for the first time, but also to be part of his team, his family. So I remember that day, we were there standing in the embassy, and then they called. So myself and the boy, we went to the behind the counter where there were two ladies on the other side of the embassy, of the visa section. And then they told me, you just move. They wanted to talk to the boy alone. So when I moved away, before the boy was asked anything, the boy started crying. And then the two ladies also started crying. And then we got the visa. So that was a very, very special occasion. Then they called me. So you have to make sure that when you come back from Germany, you bring the whole group here to prove that they are back. So and luckily, when we were in Germany, he was also, you know, he was like a star. I remember at some point when we went to schools, a lot of, especially young girls, they wanted for him to sign the autography. You know. And then he was asking Uncle Kwame, I mean, why are they wanting me to sign on their books? So you are a star, because they want to keep the memory of you. Yes. And then we met this family, and then they fell in love. And until today, this family is sponsoring his studies. And he's now in secondary school in Southern Ireland. He's in high school now.
You're really such a caretaker of the cultural sphere here. It's been really lovely to talk with you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your stories.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you want to tell everyone who's listening to this podcast about, whether it's about the residents that you have here, where you can find their work, or maybe even where we can find you?
I think you can Google Kwame Mchaulu, and you can find me on Facebook. Not really on Instagram, mm-hmm. but very soon I'll be there. I was, but then I was not so very live there. But also, like, I can share, of course, if you go on Facebook, you can always get me on Messenger, you can get me there. But of course, Nafasi Art Space is the place. Mm-hmm. So we are now growing, really, and we really have opportunities of meeting a lot of people. Now we hope the pandemic issue might go down mm-hmm. even more, so we can have more exchanges, even physically, I would say. And here, there's a lot that we want to share with the world, with the art world, with the cultural world. Also, we also need a lot to learn in that same area. So I welcome them all to Nafasi Art Space, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for being here and taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you for actually taking time to talk to me. We'll be right back.
Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy miércoles 23 de febrero del 2022. Polonia, Eslovaquia e Islandia son los últimos países que terminarán con la mayoría de las restricciones del coronavirus. En Hong Kong, donde las infecciones están aumentando y que está siguiendo una estrategia de cero COVID similar a la de China, con el objetivo de erradicar los brotes en lugar de tratar de vivir con el virus. La agencia de noticias Reuters ha hablado con padres y maestros sobre su